This is Poppin' Crap, episode 2. And welcome to Poppin' Crap. I am Paul French, and you are?
I'm Scott.
Look at us. Look at us. Second one in. We got that down.
Oh, geez. Yeah. We're right out of the starting block tonight.
There we go.
It's been an impressive leap into...
Yes. I think I have solved my little buzzing problem with the microphone.
Oh, nice.
So...
Yes, for those of you out there who may have actually tripped over the first episode, it was a little hummier than we intended, and we think we've resolved that.
Indeed. All right, so we're going to kind of get right down to what we're doing here this week.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to do, our first part of the discussion was to have, to go over our top five TV themes.
Mm-hmm.
And so quite simply, we could have just, you know, picked any five TV themes and kind of left it at that. But that's no fun.
No, Paul had to make it interesting.
Well, I just figured because we can do sort of, because then you had the idea of going by decade.
Yeah.
And I like that.
But that lets us dive deeper later.
It does. It does.
Maybe people will be listening by then.
Yeah, exactly. See? But then when you said by decade, I thought, ooh, but what if there were limitations on that? Like you have to have one of each on your team. So one from the 60s, one from the 70s, one from the 80s, one from the 90s, and one from the post 2000 era. I know. It's a wider field. But in our defense on that one, there's a lot less shows that actually use themes now.
Yeah, it was interesting in preparing for this. The thing that really depressed me was that the more current I got, the harder it was to find themes. Yeah. And, you know, you look at TV shows now, and there's so many ads packed in every hour that they, who has time to sacrifice show time for big elaborate intros like you used to get. You go back to the 60s and the 70s, you get 2 and 3 minute opening sequences that give you the whole backstory. You explain all the characters. You know everything you need to know about that show in the opening. And now you're lucky if you get 4 notes and then it's into the show and they'll give you just, you know, opening credit names over the screen as the episode begins. And it's quite upsetting. I was disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not as easy. Definitely not as easy. All right, so that'll be kind of what we use as our criteria, basically. And you know, standard draft rules apply. You got to move on if someone else picks yours, you got to pick a different one.
Always show up with backups.
Yes.
Because somebody's going to snake something.
Yeah, you know what really surprises me, though, given my firm grounding in the 80s, I'm actually surprised at how little I had there.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. And in fact, there may be some ongoing research.
Yeah, I came out of this with. I've got the research and the documentation in place to do the eventual episode where we argue decade by decade.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I'm willing to share some of my alternates today because I feel like I need to hoard those and keep them from you for future episodes.
Yeah, because I'm likely to remember all that shit.
With my luck, yes, you are.
fair enough. So
would you like to begin?
No, by all means, you start.
I get to start.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're starting in the 60s. Again, you know, as you mentioned, it's the early ones that really have the broadest selection.
Yeah.
And I'm going Andy Griffith Show.
Oh,
1960
nice.
To 1971. That whistling, there were lyrics to the song, but it was a whistle. And it was just black and white footage of... of Andy and Opie walking down to the fishing hole. And it's a catchy, happy little jingle that sticks in your head for forever, and you'll find yourself wandering around work whistling it, getting dirty looks from people.
It is absolutely the one that just, yeah, you're right. It sticks in the head still to this day.
Yep, absolutely. And, yeah. And that was some of the criteria I used for this, was I went with memorability.
Yep.
And I went with the feelings that it invokes when you hear it. I did some playbacks of a few songs today just to make sure that it made me smile when I heard it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are songs that automatically cause a sing-along, and that I can't stop myself from doing that.
Nice.
So that's those were kind of the way I was breaking these down, along with, you know, how well does it sum up the show? Does it introduce the show well? That kind of thing. But it was primarily, I think it was the nostalgia factor above all else. So I went Andy Griffith for my first pick.
Outstanding. Well, I went with a show that ran from 1964 to 1967. you know the one.
I have a guess.
Yeah, yeah. What is your guess?
You wouldn't be talking about a 3-hour tour that went horribly awry.
I would indeed. One of my favorite shows as a kid was Gilligan's Island.
That's awesome.
God, I love that show. And in fact, I still enjoy watching them. You know, I've got the full series on DVD, and I do throw that one in every now and then. And in fact, I once played in a band that used to cover the Gilligan's Island theme, because you get like four key changes in that song.
Yeah.
And and not only do you get the key changes to keep things going, but the real deal is it tells you everything you need to know.
Totally.
You know,
it
in that
takes you through the whole. It's the Edmund Fitzgerald of nautical TV show theme songs. Like it tells a whole nautical adventure at the beginning.
Yeah, but you know, no matter what you need to know, you know, no matter whether you've seen the show ever in your life or not. Mm-hmm. You know, they did actually, you know, give us this whole even then in the, you know, the very first episode actually starts with them waking up on the beach the day after the three-hour tour. Yes. So even then, you know, you never actually saw this except in the theme, and you saw it every week. Yep. And so to me, it's that perfect encapsulation of the show, the spirit of the show, the whole bit. And so, yes, Gilligan's Island is my 1960s theme.
And now, are you going with the full version of the song?
Of course.
Or are you going to screw everybody
none
over
of this
with
and
the and the rest?
None garbage. Of this and the rest crap. No, the professor and Marianne, both very, very important to the island. And yeah, I, you know, even as a little kid, I can remember getting a little miffed about the whole...
Totally. Yeah. I remember being a kid watching this and the outrage that they'd cut them out.
Exactly.
Because, you know, sometimes you got the opening that had everybody and other times you didn't. And you were like, that is robbery. And like the sense of injustice that it brought out in a 9-year-old was crazy.
And and of course it was written by Sherwood Schwartz, who was the show creator, and George Wiley. And just basically set up to set up the premise. It replaced, there was an original theme song done by a fella named John Williams.
Oh, I wonder what became of him.
Yeah, exactly.
It's too bad that didn't work out for him.
Exactly. And
I didn't know that. I didn't know Gilligan's Island had another theme.
It had they originally were going to use this Calypso theme song that he had written. And, now,
John Williams Calypso. There's a sentence you thought you'd ever say.
But here's the thing: from 1964 to 65, John Williams was the composer of the incidental music for the show.
Huh.
And when you think about it, like back in those days, the incidental music, you know, it was very, very. They always set up to be very iconic, like to be very. What's the word I'm looking for?
I do not know.
Standardized. You know, it's like when Darth Vader walks in, you know, you get in right? And it was they all had like their sort of little theme bits, and there were you know, when something would happen, you had that little musical sting that basically was consistent throughout. So really, yeah. Although he only worked on it for that first year, In fact, he, you know, his fingerprints were still on that show throughout. One Absolutely. Other thing is that it was recorded, or in the first season, the band that played the theme song were the Wellingtons.
I am not familiar.
You don't need to be. However, you will have seen them because they played the Mosquitoes.
Oh, wow.
The band that got trapped on the island in the second season. Now, but ironically, you know, they got to at least appear in the show, but the theme was re-recorded by the Eligibles. So the Wellingtons were actually those sons of bitches that did the and the rest. The Eligibles were the band that replaced them, and they were the ones that actually did the... you know, Professor and Marianne. So it was two different bands. Does sound very similar. So there you go.
Interesting thing about Gilligan's Island that was pointed out to me in a writing class I was in was that the cast of Gilligan's Island can be paired to the Seven Deadly Sins.
Okay, tell me about this.
You're going to ask me now to do it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, you've got Rage in the cap or the skipper.
Yeah.
You've got, I guess it's Sloth and Gilligan.
Yeah.
Hang on, I'm frantically typing into Google. Just because I'm going to end up screwing them all up. You've got, well, the professor would be Pride.
Yeah.
Right? And one of us
well, is boom, greed. Boom. Greed would be Mr. Howell.
Mr. Howell. Here we are. Pride was the professor. Covetousness was Mr. Howell. Lust was Ginger. Anger was Mrs. Howell. That's odd. Mm. Gluttony was the skipper. Oh, I guess.
Okay.
Envy was Marianne, and sloth was Gilligan. Huh. I don't see anger from Mrs. Howell.
Yeah, I'm not buying that.
I don't. She could be covetous. Covetousness, and Mr. Howell could be gluttony.
Covetousness? I don't know.
Greed.
Yeah.
But that's weird. That I question the Mrs. Howell part. Yes. That doesn't seem right. Anyway, it was something that was batted around one night in this class, and it was kind of cool. So Gilligan's Island, great pick, was on my list. I went with the whistle.
There you go. Yeah.
So, do you want to? Should we flip back and forth?
Nope.
Do you want to do the 70s?
No, you take the 70s next.
Okay. Because I'm always going to be taking one off the table for you. You'll never possibly be taking one off the table for me.
Oh, but we don't know that.
Oh, okay. We're just going to assume that we're both going to be way out.
There are some decades where I have a deep bench.
And the 70s is when you feel safe.
This is when I feel pretty comfortable in.
I am going the 70s, 1978 to 1982.
God damn it.
The adventures of a small town radio station damn in it. Deepest, darkest Cincinnati, Ohio. WKRP in Cincinnati. Yeah. I'm sorry.
That
did
was
I take something you wanted?
Totally choice number one. You totally got me.
Well, so much for that deep bench, my friend.
Yeah. You basically took out my lead off hitter. Yeah,
I love that damn show, and the theme song is so spectacular, and the fact that it opens with that up and down the radio dial, where they're flipping past things, and there's songs and commercials, and so, you know, except no other plastic, and then the newscast, while maintaining he was not intoxicated, could not explain his nudity.
Yeah.
And that great moment where two gold Volkswagen Beetles drive alongside each other on the highway footage, which means that you get to yell punch buggy no punch back at the top of your lungs and pound your sibling. It aired every night in reruns on CBC, and I'd watch it while doing my math homework while Dad was sitting behind me writing one of his reports.
Uh-huh.
And it meant that I had twisted humor as a kid because I was watching shows that nobody else was watching at that age. I was, you know, fourth and fifth grade thinking WKRP was hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
And nobody else understood what was going on or why. And I just assumed everybody else was watching it as well. You have that point when you're a kid where you just assume everybody else's experience is identical to yours.
Yeah.
Oops. But loved that show. It was fantastic. Got cut down far too young. It only made, what, 3 seasons?
Yeah, yeah.
And it went out really high up. There was some stuff I read once upon a time about Gordon Jump and Howard Hessman were both really active protesting, just in assorted social activism.
Okay.
And that a large chunk of what they brought to that was their popularity and their fame from this show. And so the theory and the belief that some people were putting out there was that the show was taken away to slow them down and shut them up, which sounds very conspiracy, but the show went out after 3 seasons in like the number 3 spot or something like that. And just, you know, what station do you know that'll, or what network would ever drop a show that was actually doing that well? Usually it's, they squeeze it until it falls out of the ratings and then it gets axed. So,
and I can't, I can't imagine that it would have been a particularly expensive show, save for music licensing.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't really a thing.
The greatest thing recently is that they finally negotiated that for the DVD release.
Yeah.
And so there is a box set now that has all the right music in place. Because when they did the first release of just the single season, they had to replace all the music because they, at the time, they nobody would have negotiated the rights for this kind of a re-release and a reissue.
Yeah. No, exactly.
And the show hinged on the fact that they were playing current hits and it was supposed to sound like a real radio station at the time. And so now they're, you know, you get to the part where you're trying to re-release it and you've got to negotiate with, you know, Rolling Stones and Elton John. And I mean, they on the first DVD round, they couldn't even get the rights to Fly Me to the Moon. So Jennifer's doorbell didn't play the right song.
That's right. It was beautiful. So, it ended up being Beautiful Dreamer.
So everybody looks like they're out of step with the music, and all the DJs coming in and out of the song breaks are rocking away in their chairs. And they just look incredibly offbeat, off tempo, and awkward because they're dancing to a different song than the one we're hearing. And,
yeah.
It's brutal. But I love that show. That every year, the turkey drop episode has to be played for Thanksgiving.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, you know, with God as my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
Yeah.
And I was maintaining for a long time.
Speed kills, Dell. Speed kills, Dell.
I thought it was one of the single greatest last lines of an episode. With God as my witness, I thought turkeys could fly. And then realized that it's not the last line of the episode. So, oops. And that was actually based on a true story. When they were doing research for the show, they were touring around radio stations, and they got to one. And the producers got to one station and they said, wait, you're collecting stories about what? Oh my God, have I got a story for you? No, come here. And they call this guy over who sheepishly has to tell them the story about the time he did a turkey giveaway. And he actually used the line in the conversation and telling the story, with God as my witness, I thought turkeys could fly. It was great. It was one of the first shows where I learned to appreciate and understand the dramedy model, where, you know, it's a comedy, but it'll also it'll take a turn and it'll give you a dramatic moment. They did a lot of really great episodes and weren't afraid to, you know, stop being funny for a while. It was cool. I love that show.
Absolutely.
To this day. We could do a whole episode on that, and I promise if I have anything to say about it someday, we will.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it'll involve a rewatch at some point, that's for sure.
Beautiful. Well, yeah. I will go through that one episode at a time.
Sorry, it was after the fourth season that they were canceled.
Did they go 4?
Yeah. And it was ranked number 7. And the episode ended on a cliffhanger because when it was produced, cast and crew had expected the series to be renewed. But they had actually already been canceled prior to the... interesting. Lou Grant was another series that was that was sitting with high ratings. It was canceled that same year.
And wasn't he super active as well?
Yeah, I think at the time, was he? Maybe. Yeah.
I know, getting all conspiracy, but
maybe a little bit. Maybe a little bit. You know, well, certainly not this would be the case with Lou Grant, but you know, the CBS demographic was tended to skew a little bit older than I think what really worked for WKRP. But who knows?
All right, it ends with the 24-hour news switch.
That's right.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, exactly. But,
yeah, okay. Yeah, so it is 4 seasons.
Yeah.
My bad.
All right, so then I go to the next one on the bench, and I'm going to move to something that was actually written by a sitcom star.
Hmm.
And the show ran from 1978 until 1986 on two networks.
Wow.
I speak, of course, of Alan Thicke's theme for Different Strokes.
Ah, okay.
See, because this is another one that much like they got kind of tired of packing and unpacking as he gets into that little bridge going up there. That's the everybody's got a special kind of story part of Different Strokes. It is a theme that sticks in my head constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, certainly enjoyed the show as a kid. You know, it was sort of one of the first shows that I, you know, always had to watch, and it used to be on Friday nights. And back when Friday night was actually a good place where they put shows that were doing well.
Yeah. And, remember those days?
Yeah, I always loved the song. It was, you know, again, it kind of gave you the story of sort of, you know, it still kind of kept with that whole idea of the, we're telling you everything you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
And
we're going to show you the characters arriving at the strange, crazy penthouse.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so it really kind of gave you that whole story up mm-hmm. ahead of things.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go.
Of spin-offs as well, and
well, yeah, or absolutely. At least the one. Well,
did it have another?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So there was, of course, Facts of Life, yeah. There was also Hello, Larry.
I do not know what that is.
Oh, 1979 to 1980. That was McLean Stevenson, of course, of MASH fame, and he played. Mr. Drummond's old army buddy, and he was a talk show host on a radio station, and so Mr. Drummond had bought the company that he worked at, and so there's that. I don't think you can count Silver Spoons as a spinoff, although Arnold did appear on the show.
Right. No, it was made independently, wasn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't a spinoff. It was you know, I think they shared a production company, and that was about it. Yeah. So no link to the show. I mean, like, Hello, Larry actually had a I guess it technically wasn't a spinoff either, because that was really just a now that I think about it, it was just a crossover, and they decided to you know, basically attach the two characters. And so Hello, Larry, yeah, it starred McLean Stevenson, and also the sports guy on the radio station was one Meadowlark Lemon playing himself. And it had, like, Joanna Gleason. She was the station manager. And future Paris Hilton aunt Kim Richards played his daughter. One of his daughters.
Wow.
Yeah, so there you go.
No, the Facts of Life was the one I knew, and I mean, Facts of Life is another one that could make this list.
Oh, easily. Yeah.
It was a great theme song. That was Mrs. Garrett's spinoff, so there's no denying that that's a spinoff.
Oh, without a doubt, no.
Kimberly was at the school for the first year.
And yeah. Well, and they actually did a backdoor pilot episode in the late in yes. it, toward the end of the first season.
Yes. Yeah, it there's a neat thing on YouTube that mm-hmm. I tripped over, some kind of behind the scenes on explaining the whole story of The Facts of Life. It's worth Googling at some point. Maybe we'll throw it up on the webpage.
Exactly. So just trying to see if there's anything else on that. But yeah, Alan Thicke wrote a ton of theme songs. And so it's kind of a, well, this is just kind of a thing is that, you know, he created a bunch of theme songs. And you know, it's one of those things where when I first heard that he had written, I was like, oh, really? I had no idea. And now you can't not hear his voice in it.
Yeah.
You know, totally, I mean, right? It's so distinctive. So there we go. All right.
Yes.
Into the 80s, sir.
All right. Into the 80s. Well, there were several, but I had to go with one of those shows that just sort of defined me as a kid. 83 to 87.
Oh.
Yeah. In 1972, a crack commando unit was sent to prison by military court for a plan they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped. to the Los Angeles Underground, where they survive as soldiers of fortune. If you have a problem, no one else can help. And if you can find them, maybe you can hire the A-Team.
I love it when a good plan comes together.
I love that show. Uh-huh. That's a Mike Post theme.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and, we'll be talking about him later.
Yeah, so he's going to come up a few times, I'm sure. Yeah. How do you not?
Yeah,
it's that show was amazing. The theme song is fantastic, and it was one of the ones where I love a theme song with a voiceover opening, and loved that it every season it was a different opening sequence. They'd pull different clips,
right?
And so as a kid, you're watching it, and these are clips from shows you haven't seen yet because they're still to come in the season that you're watching, and it becomes like this checklist at the beginning of every episode of action that you know is still in store. And I love that. Couldn't get enough of it.
Nice.
I love me some A-Team.
Yeah, you really couldn't go wrong with that. I mean, and it's you're right. It's so classic Mike Post. Because you've got sort of the bombastic bit at the beginning, and then it gets into the bit where he kind of rocks out a little bit.
Rocks out, and then it comes back around, and then it's got the little melodic bit, and then amps back up again, and it's so good.
Back when such things could go for that time, and it was another one of his was on my bench for the 70s as well. But we'll talk about that when we do the 70s again.
Sure.
Yeah. anyway, all right. For me, for the 80s,
mm-hmm.
Well, let me just see if I can...
Do tell.
Well, okay. So this show, I watched the hell out of this show, let me tell you. It was... it started in the mid-80s. I'm just mm-hmm. trying to find the year. I had it here just a second. There we go. I started in 1984, and I can remember watching it all through high school. And then when I finally there we go. All right. When I went through university, I watched it through most of that as well, and never would miss it. So it ran from 84 to 92, and...
84 to 92. I do not have one of those. Oh.
So, of course, Night Court. You know, that great little bass riff off the top. Yeah, you know, much like as a kid, I loved the theme. I think I loved the theme from Barney Miller more than I liked the show.
it was on my list as a possible.
Oh, it's a great theme.
It's a great theme song. Great,
great little bass bit on at the top.
Everybody talks about the bass bit, and everybody goes Seinfeld when it comes to bass. But how do you?
But that's not actual bass. Yeah, that's not actual bass. So, Night Court had a great theme, and I mean it was a show I always loved, and so to me it always had that you know, just hearing that theme, I knew I was going to get to laugh.
Yeah.
And so, yes. So Night Court is mine. I can't get any deeper into it because that's pretty much it.
Yeah. No, I love the show as well. We talked about that when we were talking with John Larroquette before, but it was there on the list, but I had to go bigger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Forgive the criticism, but I had to go larger.
It was the 80s. It's all about that. Now, interestingly, the guy who created the show actually also had worked on Barney Miller. So he's like, we need a bass. We need a bass for the theme. And
all full circle.
Yeah, exactly. But it was composed by Jack Elliott, and it was Ernie Watts on the saxophone. Saxophone. And has since been used. It was used in an episode of The Family Guy, Bill and Peter's Bogus Journey, which had animations of former U.S. President Bill Clinton playing saxophone along with Secret Service musicians playing backup.
I don't know that I saw that, and if I did, I clearly did not recall it. That's for sure.
All right, moving into the 90s, sir.
Into the 90s. This was one where there were some choices. Again, this is most of these decades, like still on my, even when I transposed my scratch notes onto a final page, each of these decades still have 7 or 8 shows listed. So, I mean, this is the list I'm coming back to for future, future conversations about this, but it's such a list. So anyway, the 90s, 95 to 04. This is a big long running one. And one of the reasons that I picked this one was that they changed their theme multiple times during the run of the show. And that was the Drew Carey Show. And they did opening musical numbers. They didn't do the opening theme. Cleveland Rocks was the one that everybody knows the most. They had
Moon Over Parma was the first one.
Yes, originally. And then 5 o'clock Whistle was.
Oh, I love that song so much.
Yeah, it's just
5 o'clock World.
That's it. Yeah. 5 o'clock World, not 5 o'clock Whistle. 5 o'clock World. It was so cool to tune in at the beginning of a season and get a completely different song. I mean, there's a handful of shows that have ever changed their theme song. In most cases, it was middle of the first season. They went, oh, crap, changed it, and then never touched it again. And they had 3 different theme songs for a 10-season running show. It was awesome. Loved it. Loved it. I was still, you know, flipping along on YouTube, and you'll trip across one of them, and you let that thing play out, and you can see Drew's having the time of his life doing a musical number, and it was great. Loved it. Loved it, loved it, loved it.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. I was thinking of that show just the other day. I think they had someone playing Drew Carey on SNL, and I was thinking, I really miss that show.
Mm-hmm. It was in reruns for a while there.
Yeah.
And it's one of those shows where when it goes, every time a show goes into syndication, you end up taking it for granted. And then, like, 2 years later, you go, oh, I missed that show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's one I miss. It was good.
Absolutely. Well, I'm actually going to go with one that seems kind of easy, but I still love it. And it is the Friends theme.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, there is nothing catchier than that. And actually, I heard the full version, quote unquote, because, of course, it was actually sort of after the fact where they said, hey, add another verse to this, we can we can get some radio play. And,
they were playing it on, like, there was a radio station that had actually cut together. They'd looped it a couple of times, and it was getting, they were getting continuous requests for it. And so the Rembrandts had to.
That's right. That's right. And what I vividly remember is when that came out, like when they released, and it was on their album LP, that it was released. It was completely re-recorded. You know, they actually hadn't written the song It was written for them. But then they came up. They did the bridge and the extra verse and the extra verses and all that. And mm-hmm. so what I vividly remember though is when they started doing the late night circuit, mm-hmm. and they went on every show and played it and. And it had this killer guitar solo on it, and so all of the guys in the show bands got to do that part because the Rembrandts were really only two guys, and yes. I remember them on they went on Conan, and then the next week they were on the Tonight Show. The next week after that they were on Letterman, and they did all of them, and. Mm-hmm. And just killed it. You know, they were like, man, this is our catch. This is our yeah. thing.
Well, it was so damn catchy. And yeah. I mean, how can you not pick a theme song that actually charted? Like,
yeah,
you know,
and you can't not clap.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Anytime there's a song, we have to do the clap. It's like, I mean, we didn't do the Addams Family, but everybody snaps in the Addams Family.
That's right.
You know, there's stuff that comes up on these that you just have to do, and anything that invokes that sing along, like I said at the beginning, that was one of the qualifiers for me.
It's an easy one, yeah.
I mean, the '90s, we neither of us took the 90210 theme song, but it's got the clap in it.
Yeah. You know what? I got to say, both that and the Melrose Place theme, I really mm-hmm. I really like both of those. But yeah. They however did not have the staying power that the Friends theme has.
No, absolutely not. And I remember when it came time to do the full version and they wanted to shoot the video, the band's condition was only if the cast appeared in it because they wanted to meet Jennifer Aniston.
Good for them.
They're not fools.
No, sir.
So that brings us into the 2000s.
Yes.
So if I were to say the words, okay, it's 2004 to 2007, and if I were to say the words, "Come on now, sugar," does that register at all?
Yeah, it was on my list as well.
Was it?
Absolutely. Oh, come on.
Veronica Mars.
Yeah.
That was a fantastic theme song.
Yeah, the Dandy Warhols, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Dandy Warhols. Used to be Friends.
That's I think
was the name of the song, wasn't it?
Yep.
And it was great. It was catchy. It was current. It was an actual song.
Yeah.
It was a good band. It was a real band. And the it did sum up where it started on the first season. You know, a long time ago, we used to be friends, but I haven't thought of you lately. And that was where that character started that season, was completely disconnected from her pre-existing social circle and friends. So it was a good fit, right tone.
Yeah.
It was, forgive the grandpa terms here, it was young, it was hip, and, you know, it helped set the tone for the show and for the, it was great. I loved it. Loved that song. I was burning it on mixed CDs mm-hmm. at the time, so that was it for me.
Yeah, no,
I don't know what else to say to that one. They did a remix of it in the third season, was not as good. They slowed it down. And drew it out, and it just kind of hurt things. That coupled with the shift of the show from high school to college, I think both kind of hurt it. It's weird when you find yourself thinking, you know, they changed the theme song and it hurt the show is a weird thing to say, but it was like, you know, when Felicity cut her hair. Like, wait a minute, this isn't, no, hang on.
Yeah. So, yeah, but you don't mess with stuff.
Mm-hmm. It was a good thing, and I mean, which is a stupid thing for me to say, one pick after I applauded Drew Carey for rebooting their theme song three times over the course of the season.
But that was different. That was different.
For the record, I'm completely aware of the hypocrisy I spew out, but it's my hypocrisy, and I like it the way it is. Thank you.
We like it that way. All right.
Over to you, sir. Bring it on home.
That's not it at all.
Oh, look at this. You know, we can't pay for these songs.
Yeah, we're not playing it long enough for it to count, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because it's not the theme.
Peter Gabriel?
No. No, the theme that I'm going with is
from an 07 show.
Was it? I don't remember what year it ran, but it is it is the show that brought us the greatest character of the last 20 years, Ron Swanson.
Oh, wow.
Parks and Recreation. It has much like I really loved the I really loved the Office theme as well.
Yep.
And that's another one that just really stuck for me. Just a really great, cool instrumental piece. But there's a complexity and yet still a simplicity to the Parks and Rec theme that just really gets me.
It sounds like a promotional film from 15 years ago. It sounds like something you wanted to watch in school, or it was a geography video about the provinces or something like that.
Yes,
like
it's got that
perfect sound that sounds like an educational arm of something is involved.
Yeah, it's very regimented at the beginning, and then they pull in for this big finish at the end, and it's just fantastic. That's one that I always enjoyed. There's a few like neat little, you know, because there were so few shows that have done them over the last bunch of years, and so I always appreciate when they do it, you know. And I had a couple of other ones in there that might have been sort of bigger and splashier, but man, and you know, let me say that I will say this though, the Friday Night Lights theme was a close second on that one.
I still haven't watched that show yet, and I don't think I know that theme song.
It's just this really, really neat sort of textural delay guitar bit it's great. But yes. still, I gotta say, it is without a doubt for me the Parks and Rec theme. So there we go.
Hmm. So, summing them up.
Mm-hmm.
We've got from the 60s, we have the Andy Griffith Show and Gilligan's Island.
Yep.
From the 70s, we have WKRP in Cincinnati and Different Strokes. From the 80s, we have the A-Team and Night Court. From the 90s, we had the Drew Carey Show and Friends. And from the 2000s, we had Veronica Mars and Parks and Recreation.
Okay.
That is quite the list. Do we want to talk about any of our extras, or do we want to leave those for future?
Let's leave those. I know I kind of couldn't help but mention a couple of them, but
I'm guilty too. But
let's just hold on to those for a later time when we actually compile our top five for each decade.
Sounds good to me.
All right.
And so we thought that we would take one of the games we like to play is this watch tape cancel, which is a variation of, you know, F, Mary, Kill.
Yeah.
And we thought that what we could do here is we could put these into brackets and take them out. But first thing we need to do is take one of them out because there's 10. So which one do we want to just clobber right out of the gate? Well, we drop in Andy Griffith? Or do we just want to randomly roll and pick the 9?
Yeah, randomly roll. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have 3 dice here. They are 10-sided. How's this for Foley art?
Ah, yes.
And then,
nerd dice.
We'll see what we've got for the first one. All right. Boom, boom, boom. Do you want me to announce them yet, or do you just want me to roll them out here?
No, let's have them.
All right. So we've got Andy Griffith is going up against Different Strokes, which is going up against Parks and Recreation. That...
All right, that's easy for me.
Yeah, that's not a difficult one.
Yeah.
Mark those off.
So I'm watching Parks and Rec. I'm taping Different Strokes, and I am canceling Andy Griffith. I know.
I believe I am doing the same. That is, yep, I think so. So the way that we're running this model is that the show that lands in the watch position in each round is one that advances to the final. Yes. Just so everybody understands what we're doing as we completely make this up on ourselves as we go.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to roll.
I can never, I, as much as I like some of the Don Knotts stuff, I could never really get into Andy Griffith. And,
yeah. Well, it was that era of shut up and listen to your father, which was every TV show at the time, right? It was the Leave It to Beaver model. And it's not that he wasn't great. He was incredibly charming in a down-home Southern way. And, you know, they had some fun supporting characters on the show. They had the Otis, who ended up in the drunk tank all the time. And
that's right, yes.
Did Gomer Pyle? No, he came from the Phil Silver show, didn't he?
I do not know.
Yeah, but there were some funny ones for that. That was one of the shows we used to watch at the cottage when it rained, because CKVR used to do all the old classics in black and white.
Oh, yes.
And we had a black and white TV at the cottage, so it didn't matter for us.
Perfect.
And
no, Gomer was introduced on the Andy Griffith Show.
Mm. I've seen the footage of Andy Griffith pulling over Phil Silvers, and I don't know if that started the spinoff for Andy Griffith or not, but... And then they had the, who was the guy that ran the barber shop?
Floyd.
Floyd the barber. I mean, they put in the time to build out the cast and stuff, but it was what it was. You can't, you know, and as soon as you move beyond the early days of television, it's hard for anything from that era to really stand up competitively. I mean, you know, Andy Griffith versus Parks and Recreation.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's the only thing that's difficult about this cross-decade bit is that it's really hard for the old stuff to hold its own. And
Ron you Swanson. Can see it
here. We ranked the three in chronological order, and that's
true.
There's a reason.
Ron Swanson would eat Floyd the Barber for breakfast.
With a side of bacon.
All bacon. Right.
So we roll the next round here. I have to re-roll one of them. Yeah, this isn't great radio at all, is it? Oh, this is interesting. So this one is Drew Carey versus Friends versus Veronica Mars.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, this is a little more interesting.
Wow. Drew Carey tops the list for me.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So that's your watch.
That's my watch. Oh, God. God.
We finally have hit a point where this is going to be a struggle.
Okay, so I would tape Veronica Mars. I would cancel Friends.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, controversial.
Wow. See, and I'm almost reverse. I'm going to... Watch Friends, tape Veronica Mars, and cancel Drew Carey.
Yeah, see, I love them all, but yeah, I just Drew Carey. They broke ground constantly.
They did. They did a lot of great stuff on that show. The live episode that they did when they did the April Fool's ones. It was they did the improv ones. They did the April Fool's ones where they do things wrong. They put continuity errors into the show.
It's fantastic.
That's great. Well, now we have a problem because this is based on us agreeing on which show advances out of the round. I don't know that we've done that. So
No. Those two go forward. So Friends and Drew Carey go forward.
Well, now we have too many in the final round, but all right. I see what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because the final round was going to be three, but I'm following it. All right. The next round. The next roll. Let's see. That one comes down. So we have Gilligan's Island. And I'm going to have to re-roll. Oh, boy. Hey, I found a flaw in this approach here.
What's that?
That I can't roll the dice enough to get the ones that we need. Nope, that one's rolled.
So wait, we've already got six in there, so there's four remaining.
There's four, and I've got one of them is down, okay, and then that one adds to it, and You need one more. That is not amongst the numbers.
That's not.
What I need a coin.
Yeah, I was just gonna say we need simpler die.
Got it. Okay. So, final round, final bracket, is Gilligan's Island and the A Team and Night Court.
Good God.
And that means that WKRP didn't make it into the finals, and I am outraged.
This is devastating.
This is a table flipping moment for me, but I'm going to try and keep it calm because it's my table and it's my home. So, oh boy, watch,
yeah,
tape, cancel. I'm going to watch Night Court, tape the A Team, and cancel Gilligan's Island. Yourself?
I am going to... This is going to get you. I am going to watch Night Court. I am going to tape Gilligan's Island. And Mr. T is going to have to pity this fool.
That's still fair. I can't look at that. So now here's a problem. We have four advancing to a three-slot game. So are just two cancels?
So we got... So out of four, there... Yeah.
Parks and Recreation.
Yep.
Drew Carey, Friends, and Night Court.
Okay. So for me, Drew Carey remains my watch. Night Court is my tape. And what am I left with here?
Parks and Recreation and Friends. Well, you already canceled Friends, so I don't see you having a problem with that.
Yeah. Yeah, but that means I gotta cancel Parks. Damn it!
Well, that's interesting.
So wait, what did I say my tape was?
You said your tape was Night Court.
Yeah, no, it's Parks and Rec. Night Court. Night Court's on the pile with Friends.
So you are going with, you're watching Drew Carey.
Yep.
And you are taping Parks and Recreation. And
yep.
You are.
Canceling the other two.
The other two. Wow. Well, here's where it gets weird, because I tried to cancel Drew Carey in the first round, and so to suddenly flip and move it up the list is... It's just going to confuse everybody.
Yes.
People will be talking about this on after shows for weeks to come.
Yes, indeed.
I have got to watch Night Court, I think. I think I'm watching Night Court, and I'm taping Friends, and I'm canceling Parks and Recreation and Drew Carey. Well, there you have it.
Okay, so our two...
That's how the podcast ended, kids, was that
our two winners...
two hosts couldn't talk to each other anymore.
What were our two... What were, no, this is the whole thing, is that we can. What were our two winners?
The two winners were, you picked Drew Carey and I picked Night Court.
Okay. Oh, that seems acceptable to me.
Yeah, and then it's interesting because we both chose to cancel each other's first choice.
Yes, yes.
And then we each chose a different secondary one to tape. That's funny.
Yeah. Well, it becomes a different game then, doesn't it? I mean, that's the trick.
That is unexpected.
All right.
A couple of cards here to wrap it up.
Yeah, let's do that. We got about just over 5 minutes left.
Okay. How many cards are we doing? Two or three?
Start with one.
Okay. Oh, ye of little faith. Let's see. All right. Once again, this is the Trivia Pursuit from 1991-92 edition. So it's a little dated, but we enjoy the hell out of it, and it all comes down to what cards we pull as to whether we completely embarrass ourselves or dominate like kings.
Question one.
I have the card right here. Classics. What tune did Old Gold's Dancing Cigarette Packs dance to in TV ads? See, this would be an example of the, it all comes down to what card we've got.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I have no clue. Old Golds, dancing cigarette packs, dance tune, TV ads. Somewhere Over the Rainbow. That's my guess.
There you go.
Sidewalks of New York.
Of course, yes.
Of course.
Everyone's favorite so dancing cigarette song.
Yeah, we what fools we were.
Indeed.
Okay, so next category is sitcoms. What 1989 sitcom had Major McGillis fall for reporter Polly Cooper after she'd written a put-down of him? I do know this one.
Oh,
Gerald McCraney.
Oh, it is okay. I had thought that, but I never watched it, so
it was Major Dad.
Major Dad, yeah.
Major Dad.
Yeah, I remember the show, and there was Gunny, right? Was one of the characters? There was a character named Gunny.
Was there? Was that one of the girls?
That's what I'm saying. I never watched it, so I'm not entirely sure. But I had a girlfriend at the time, and that it was out who did watch it. But that's why we're not. That's why we weren't together for very much longer.
Well, it was one of those. Let's take somebody who's got his life a certain way, and then throw him a family. And
yes. So, yes.
He falls in love with this reporter and then moves into this household, marries her, and now has three daughters overnight, and they don't know what to do with their military new dad, and he doesn't know what to do with a bunch of girls.
Gotcha.
Wackiness ensued.
Indeed, indeed.
For many seasons. All right. Drama is the next category. Ooh. What geometrical shape were the ID badges worn by uncle agents in the office?
Oh.
What geometrical shape were the ID badges worn by uncle agents in the office? I want to say triangle, but that's just because I figure it can't be a square or a rectangle.
I would think maybe a hexagon.
Love it. Let's go hexagon.
Yeah.
It's a triangle.
All right. There we go.
Whoops. So I think we're 1-for-3 at this point.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not going well for us, no.
Ah, Kids and Games. This is where we really dominate. What musical quiz show saw host Tom Kennedy backed by a 12-piece orchestra? That has got to be
Name That Tune.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
Name That Tune. Beautiful. Beautiful. Next one is Stars. What poet songs did Rock Hudson wax an album of? Oh, geez. What poet songs did Rock Hudson wax an album of?
Robert Frost.
What about like Bob Dylan? Or would they just consider him a song?
Yeah, I don't know.
They would call him a poet first. All right, I love it. Robert Frost. Rod McEwen's of Twilight Zone fame, is he not?
What?
McEwen?
No, that's Rod Serling.
Who the hell's Rod McEwen? It's a name.
Yeah, he was a poet. I don't know if you know this, but Rock Hudson actually did an album of his poetry.
Really? The hell you say?
This is what I hear. This is what I hear.
I'm going to file that away because someday there'll be a trivia contest and I'll need to answer that. I'm actually looking up Rod McEwen right now because I believe that he was a person. Rod McEwen. He was a person. Rod McEwen was an American poet, singer, songwriter, and actor. What did he act in? I feel like this should have been in... I should have put this into IMDb instead. Rod McEwen, the singer, did we touch the sky?
I'm not familiar with him.
I'm getting nothing here. I know the name, but I don't know why. But anyway, we'll follow up on that. The corrections department will have something on that next time.
There we go. But yeah, no, if you're looking for stuff that he did... it's very strange, actually. Everything just lists, even on IMDb, it actually lists his the stuff that he's written. I'm trying to find something where it shows his filmography as an actor. And there we go. Actor. The Critic, he played himself. He was Archimedes on the Little Mermaid TV series.
So I'm clearly getting a false positive off of this.
Yeah, I'm not finding much in the way of stuff that Yeah.
All right, moving on to wild card.
Yes.
Wild card. What Nine Lives ad animal autographed 8x10
Morris the cat.
Paw print?
Morris the cat.
Morris the cat. You are right. So we got half the card.
Okay.
We got 4 for 6 if you'll accept my triangular when we agreed on hexagon, but I don't think we should cheat like that. We're better than that.
Sure. Yeah, that's what we are.
Can I interest you in another card?
One more card. One more card. Yeah, and then we'll wrap it up.
All right. Who talked to his Jeep Nelly Bell on the Roy Rogers show? Who talked to his Jeep Nelly Bell or Nelly Belly? Nelly Bell. Nelly Bell on the Roy Rogers show. We go out on our limb and say Roy Rogers.
Sure.
Pat Brady.
Oh, yeah, Pat Brady. He's that guy that always talked to his Nelly Bell. Yeah.
The quarterback? Oh, that'd be Tom Brady. What? Okay, we moved on to sitcoms. What Cindy Williams series was a mid-season replacement in 1976?
Oh.
That's got to be Laverne and Shirley, doesn't it?
Was it that early?
I am not looking at my notebook.
Let's say yes.
I had Laverne and Shirley down as a possible series song.
Oh, Shamil Shlemazel Hassan Pfeffer Incorporated.
Laverne and Shirley.
Wow.
Woohoo. Oh, boy. What 1977 miniseries won 6 of the 37 Emmys it was up for? You think Roots. That's Roots
gotta
or
Roots.
Rich Man, Poor Man?
Ooh. I'm going to say Roots.
I feel like it's Roots. Roots.
Yeah.
We're on fire now. That's 2 for 3.
Look at us.
Kids and Games. What was the highest rated quiz show of the 50s? I've Got a Secret, You Bet Your Life, or the $64,000 question? Ooh, we have a 1 in 3 chance.
Mm.
I've Got a Secret, You Bet Your Life, or the $64,000 question?
Ooh.
I feel like it's You Bet Your Life.
Yeah, that sounds right to me.
You Bet Your Life.
Ah, yes.
Damn, we're on fire now. Stars, what daytime talk show host began his 24th season in 1990-91?
I'm sorry, then what?
What daytime talk show host began his 24th season in 1990-91?
Phil Donahue.
Phil Donahue? Phil Donahue.
Ugh.
Oh, we're moving now. Oh, I may need to shuffle these cards. Wild card. What feline TV ad star was discovered
the cat.
In Lone
Morris
Park,
the cat.
Illinois Animal Shelter? It is Morris the Cat. That's good. All right. We've still got wins on the board.
There we
that
go.
That counts for something, damn it.
All right, then. I think having won that solidly is as good a time as any to finish it off.
Quickly, run away.
All right. Comments are welcome at popandcrap@gmail.com. That's PopNCRAP. We're on the Twitter as PopNCRAP. That's right, Pop and Crap. Or you can head over to our website, popandcrap.com. Is that it?
Or like us and follow us on Facebook.
That's right. Just type Pop and Crap, PopNCRAP, in the little searchy box, and it will take you right to us.
I want to know how long you're going to have to spell that out every time.
I know. I might end up just saying Pop and Crap, you know, and we'll figure it out.
Just to redirect them.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. So with that, we are going to wrap things up, and we will catch you all next week.
Yeah. And until next time, remember, it's all just pop and crap.